Legend of Yue Fei, Chapter 77.
Yule sets up this multi-pronged attack. Total annihilation is the goal.
Right. He's got the younger generation leading the charge. Wanliang, Yutong, Lu Wenlong, Fan Cheng. They're heading up the first two main divisions. These guys are the inheritors carrying the torch.
And backing them up, you've got the old guard, the absolute core, five veteran generals, Ji King, Liangxing, Zhao Yun, Zhu King, and of course, good old New Gao.
A real sledgehammer aimed right at the retreating Jurchens.
And the source material describes the fighting in almost like cosmic terms. They hit the Jurchen camp so hard, it says the killing went on until you. Basically, heaven and earth were shaking.
It was a complete rout, just overwhelming.
Catastrophic is probably the word. The Golden Army, the Jurchen forces, they took an unbelievable hit. Wu Zhu started with maybe 500,000.
Yeah, and the source says more than half were killed or scattered. So you're looking at, what, 250,000 casualties? Plus, Wu Zhu lost over 20 of his top generals. His entire command structure just evaporated.
Gone. So Wu Zhu himself flees, gets outside the pass, and his plan is basically run home, regroup, beg for a whole new army.
Be right here, Yule pauses. He halts the main pursuit briefly, just to wait for supplies. It feels like this moment of, you know, mission accomplished, the villains beaten, the father's oath seems fulfilled.
It really feels like the war could be over right there.
But that pause, you have to wonder, after such a massive win, built entirely on momentum, was waiting for logistics, even vital logistics, the right call. Did it give Wu Zhu the opening he desperately needed?
It certainly seems like it created a window, because the story just turns on a dime, from this world-shaking victory to this sudden grinding halt.
War never stops, does it? Any pause, the enemy uses it.
And that opportunity appears almost instantly. Wu Zhu's running, and bam, he bumps right into unexpected backup at Boundary Mountain. Qishan?
Yeah, this is where Marshal Shan Shichuo and Commander Lian Erxinshan show up. And get this, they only have 5,000 fresh troops.
5,000? After losing a 250,000, that sounds like nothing. Like a speed bump.
Right. But Shan Shichuo, he sees things differently. Wu Zhu is panicked, ready to just keep running all the way home.
But Shan Shichuo steps in. He basically tells Wu Zhu, look, if you run now, Yule just rolls over us. You go home, get that big army ready. I will hold this pass. I'll stop them here.
He even promises to capture the southern forces himself, which is bold. But the core idea is brilliant. He's offering Wu Zhu time, strategic breathing room.
So it's a total pivot, not about winning territory anymore, it's about winning time. Shan Shituo sees Jishan Pass as the perfect choke point.
Exactly. He knows he can't beat Yulai's whole army with 5,000 men, but maybe he can bleed them, slow them down, absorb that initial shockwave from the big victory.
He's basically willing to sacrifice his small force, isn't he? To buy time for the larger war effort. His mission isn't victory, it's delay.
Which, honestly, makes him a much more dangerous opponent than maybe some of the others Yule had faced. He understands the strategic play.
So Yule gets to Jishan, probably expecting to just punch through these 5,000 guys and keep chasing Wu Zhu. But instead, wall. Shan Shituo rides out immediately, challenging the Song camp.
And the description the text gives us of this guy, it's something else. It's designed to terrify.
It really is. He's explicitly compared to, like, demons from the underworld. The fate-urging judge, the evil ghost of impermanence, it's pure psychological warfare before he even lifts a weapon.
Let's get into the details because they're wild. Black, skinny face, fierce, coarse, yellow eyebrows, this mouth like a thunder god or a strange bird, a Persian nose like an oil bottle.
And the eyes, white dominant ghost eyes. This isn't just a tough general. The text paints him as a monster.
A visual designed to instill fear. And his weapon matches the image. He carries a gold-plated dang. Think of it like a massive, heavy trident head on a pole, meant for smashing.
And the weight. The source says 120 jin.
Which is what? About 160 pounds.
160 pounds. That's not a weapon a person wields. That's like a piece of artillery. Just the sight of it must have shaken the Song soldier.
Well, absolutely. It represents this raw, almost unnatural power. And guess who steps up to fight him?
It has to be someone significant.
It's Guanling, son of the famous Guan Sheng, carrying the iconic Green Dragon Crescent Blade. It's lineage, tradition, classic Song heroism.
Against this monstrous brute force, a symbolic clash.
And the clash is over fast. Guanling charges, they connect, and immediately Guanling finds that 160-pound dang is just too heavy.
Too heavy, that's an understatement.
Shan Shituo just rains down blows, maybe 10 consecutive hits with the dang, and Guanling is completely overwhelmed, driven back instantly.
Wow, so much for lineage in that fight.
And the impact is immediate. Shan Shituo presses the attack as Guanling retreats, and it shatters the morale of that whole division. That one duel costs the Song army 1,000 casualties out of Groundling's 3,000 men.
1,000 casualties. Just like that. After the massive win the day before.
Just like that. The momentum grinds to a screeching halt. It just shows how fragile momentum can be when you run into someone like Shan Shituo, pure force focused on one single goal. Stop the advance.
Okay, so Yu Lei and his advisors, Zhu Jin, they realize we can't just keep sending guys out to get smashed by this one warrior.
Right, direct confrontation isn't working, so they pivot to tactics. Cunning, they plan a night ambush.
The classic move. They pull the army back 20 li, about 7 miles maybe, trying to lure Shan Shituo out.
Textbook setup. Guanling on the left flank, Yan Chengfeng on the right, 3,000 men each. But the really clever part was sending Liu Wenlong on this long detour.
Ah, the flanking maneuver.
Exactly. 3,000 men swinging way around to get behind Jishan, cutting off the Jurchen retreat path. The plan was total encirclement. Trap them completely.
A really nice, complex plan. Should have worked.
Should have. But Shan Shituo, he'd apparently heard all about Wuzu getting caught by these southern tricks. He was wary.
So he didn't just charge into the trap?
No, he suspected something. He decides against a simple raid and goes for a counterplay. The text calls it the host into guest strategy.
Right.
Basically, turn the tables.
A counter ambush. Or a feint.
Kind of both. He sends two junior officers, Fang Lin and Frank Zhu, with just the 1,000 men straight down the road as a noisy, obvious feint raid.
Okay. Draw attention that way.
While he and Lian Xinshan take the main force, sneak around the flanks, and try to hit the Song army from the rear, assuming they'd be focused on the ambush ahead. Both sides were trying to trap the other.
So around 3 a.m. chaos, the feint hits the empty Song camp, the signal cannon for the Song ambush goes off.
And suddenly everyone realizes they've walked into a mess. Guanling runs into Shan Shituo on the left. Yan Chengfeng hits Lian Xinshan on the right. It's pitch black, total confusion.
And then I fight in the dark.
Pretty much. Shan Shituo quickly figures out this isn't good, fighting in the kill zone, and tries to pull back towards the pass.
But that's where Liu Wenlong is waiting. That flanking move paid off.
It did. Shan Shituo and Lian Xinshan retreat right into Liu Wenlong's blocking force. Now they're trapped between the ambushers and the blockers. They had to fight their way through until dawn.
What a night. So who won? What were the losses?
Well, the source actually calls it a tactical draw. Just a straight wash, basically. The Jurchens lost one of the junior commanders, Fang Su, and maybe 1,300 and 1,400 men total.
Okay, significant losses for them. What about the Song?
They also took a hit. Over 1,000 casualties in all that confused fighting.
Another 1,000 men down. So after the huge win, they lose 1,000 in the duel and another 1,000 in the ambush.
Yeah, the cost is mounting fast. The moment the Song camp is set up near Jishan, the Jin forces are there demanding a fight.
No breathing room.
None. Yu Lei is facing this huge threat right from the get-go.
And that threat gets a face pretty quickly.
It does. It's embodied by the Jin vanguard general, Lian Xinshan. He's the commander-in-chief of Hangguan. And the way he's described, well, the sources basically paint him as almost superhuman.
Yeah, let's dig into that description because it's clearly meant to terrify the Song forces. He's massive, right? A length of one zhang that's huge. Curly beard, these scary red eyes.
Yes, and decked out in this shining golden helmet dragon scale armor. It's all about visual intimidation.
And the weapon matches the look. This enormous fan-shaped sword, the folding fan blade, the Heishan Dao.
Exactly. It's designed to just overwhelm you, break your spirit before the fight even really starts.
So how does Yu Lei counter this monster?
He sends out one of his best, Yan Chengfeng. He's the supreme commander before the emperor, uses twin maces, the Beleng Shui.
Okay, a skilled fighter then.
Definitely. And the first clash, it's described almost mythically. Dust flying so high it changes the color of the clouds. You know, they go at it hard. 30, maybe 40 rounds. It shows Yan Chengfeng is tough, skilled. But here's the thing.
He can't match him.
He just can't match the raw power, the sheer presence of Lian Xinshan. His skill hits a wall.
So what does he do?
He has to resort to tactics. Feigns a strike, then pulls back fast. A calculated retreat.
So not quite a failure, but it shows they need more.
Right? Precisely. It's an immediate signal. One general, even a top one, isn't enough for this guy.
But if they have to retreat that early, just dealing with the vanguard, doesn't that put the Song in a really tough spot strategically?
That's a really sharp point.
Yeah.
Their individual fighters might not be enough. They can't afford to lose guys like Yan Xingfang one by one.
So what happens next? They can't just keep feeding generals into the meat grinder.
Well, this is where the story cleverly introduces the next wave, almost like fate intervening, as Yan Xingfang is pulling back.
Yeah.
He literally runs straight into two new heroes. They were already on their way to join Yu Lei's camp. It's like the narrative mechanism for passing the torch.
Ah, the cavalry arrives. Or, well, the next generation.
Exactly. We get our first look. There's Dong Yaozan, son of the famous General Dong Jianxian. He's got this really impressive weapon, the nine-tined heaven-propping fork.
Sounds formidable.
And with him is Wang Biao, son of General Wang Gan. He's got a heavy staff, a gun. They're not just carrying weapons. They're carrying their father's reputations, that weight.
Big shoes to fill?
Huge.
Hmm.
And Dong Yaozan, maybe wanting to prove himself, he jumps right into the fight against Lian Erik Xianxian.
Does he fare any better?
He struggles too, which honestly just highlights how incredibly tough this Jin general is.
Okay, so even fresh talent isn't enough on its own.
Right. It's only when all three of them gang up Dong, Wang, and Yan Xingfang, who's recovered a bit, only when they attack together.
Like a triangle attack.
Yeah, coordinating their assault. Only then does Lian Erik Xianxian finally break. He can't handle three skilled opponents at once. He's forced back, retreating to his own commander, Shan Shutu.
Yes. So a small victory, secured by teamwork, the new generation steps up.
It is. And it leads to this galvanizing moment for the whole camp. Dong Yaozan and Wang Biao tell Yu Lei, hey, we're just the advance party.
Oh, there's more.
There's the one. They reveal that right behind them, traveling with troops and vital supplies, is Yang Jizu.
Yang Jizu, son of Yang Zixing, the legendary archer.
The very same. He's coming to join the fight, and crucially, to avenge his father. The mood shifts instantly. It's not just about defense anymore. It's about the main event.
Okay, so if Lian Erxinshan was the warm-up act,
Shan Shitu is the headliner.
Yeah.
The next day, the main Jin commander, Shan Shitu himself, takes the field. He's wielding this impressive flowing gold pole arm.
Yujin Tang Ding.
Sounds heavy.
He's meant to be the one who just smashes the Song flank entirely. And Wang Ying, you know, little god of fire. He tries to stop him, full of confidence.
How does that go?
Badly. Really badly. Shan Shitu is just devastating. Too fast, too strong. Wang Ying manages maybe a few parries, then he has to turn and run for his life. Utterly overwhelmed.
Wow. So Shan Shituo is on another level entirely. Completely. And that quick defeat is critical because it shifts the focus. It forces the action away from the glorious battlefield duel and towards something much more mundane but vital.
Logistics again.
Exactly. Shan Shituo isn't just chasing Wang Ying for glory. He chases him right into the path of Niu Gao.
Niu Gao, the old veteran.
Yep. And Niu Gao isn't leading troops into battle. He's leading the Liang Cao, the grain and supply convoy, towards the Song camp.
Oh, no. The supplies are blocked.
Completely blocked.
Ew.
The entire operation is suddenly at risk. Lose the grain. The army starves. Duels don't matter then.
Right.
Niu Gao, being the crafty old soldier he is, sees this immediately. He has to engage Shan Shituo just to buy some time. But, well, this is where we see Shan Shituo's true power.
What happens? Niu Gao's tough, isn't he?
Tough, yes. But Shan Shituo just dismisses him. The text says his mace, or maybe it's a gene, a straight sword, sometimes translated as mace gets knocked flying, like way up into the half-sky cloud, lands uselessly in the grass.
He's disarmed. Instantly.
Instantly. Completely exposed. The grain convoy is stuck. It looks hopeless.
Okay, hold on. He's defeated, weaponless, supplies blocked. What can he possibly do? Is he just going to surrender the grain?
Not Niu Gao. He can't win the fight, so he has to win with his wits.
Okay.
He pulls out the oldest trick in the book.
Which is?
Audacity, pure bluff, psychological warfare. He basically stops Shan Shituo in his tracks by insulting him. He claims Shan Shituo isn't even worthy of fighting him, says he's too weak, too insignificant to face Niu Gao's apprentice.
Apprentice? And Niu Gao has an apprentice this amazing, is this Yang Jizu?
Not yet. That's the beauty of it. He basically invents his mythical apprentice on the spot just to stall and, frankly, to needle Shan Shituo.
This is brilliant. What does he say about this apprentice?
Oh, it gets wild. He boasts this kid has tens of millions of pounds of strength, doesn't even need weapons, can take down hordes of guys barehanded.
No way.
Swears he's so fearsome he can make enemies fall off their horses just by shouting at them.
That's incredible. Just pure invention.
Pure invention. But why does it work? It plays on Shan Shichu's pride, his honor as a warrior. He's furious at the insult. But he's also maybe a little intrigued. Who is this godlike warrior?
So the bluff lands.
It lands perfectly. Niu Gao promises to go fetch this legendary student, effectively stalling the pursuit and, more importantly, protecting the grain convoy. It's a victory won entirely with a tall tale.
Amazing. And does he actually go find someone?
Well, his luck holds. As he moves away, he almost immediately runs into the real deal, the approaching forces of Yang Jizhu himself.
Wow. Talk about timing.
Perfect timing. Flying the banner of Nine Dragon Mountain pledged to the king, the stage is now truly set for the heir's entrance.
And the description of Yang Jizhu, it's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very different from the Jin generals.
Oh, completely. He's like the polar opposite.
Yeah.
Powder white all over, simple white silk, this stunning silver helmet, white armor embroidered with double dragons.
He's the picture of the noble, almost ethereal hero.
Exactly. Wielding twin halberd Xuanji, fast and elegant, riding a white dragon steed.
And the text compares him to some heavy hitters from history.
It really does. Like the second coming of Lu Bu Lu Wenhao or the rebirth of Xue Rangui. It's telling you straight up. Mm. This guy isn't just good. He's destined for legend.
So Yang Jizhu is ready to fight. But Niu Gao needs this confrontation to happen now, right? To keep Shen Shituo pinned down.
Right. And Niu Gao knows Yang Jizhu is burning to avenge his father, Yang Zaixing. So he needs to push that button hard.
How does he do it? Does he just tell him Shan Shituo is waiting?
Oh, he does much worse.
Oh.
He twists the knife. He deliberately lies, feeding Yang Jizu's rage.
What does he say?
He tells Yang Jizhu that Shan Shituo wasn't just waiting. He was actively mocking the memory of his father, mocking Yang Zaixing's famous death, fighting till the last arrow.
Oof, that's low.
It gets lower. Niu Gao claims Shan Shituo boasted he would shovel down his head.
Yeah.
Yang Jizhu's head with a single blow if he dared show his face.
Okay, that's pouring gasoline on the fire.
Exactly. The psychological manipulation is brutal, but effective. Yang Jizhu is understandably enraged. The insult to his father is unforgivable. He vows right then and there to capture Shan Shituo himself.
So Niu Gao gets his duel, driven by pure vengeance now.
Precisely the confrontation he needed. Secured by playing on that deep personal motivation.
And when they finally meet, the climax is set.
It is. Yang Jizhu rides up, radiating confidence. He refuses even to give Shan Shituo his name. Says he'll tell him who he is after he's taken his head.
Wow. Supreme confidence.
And the fight. It absolutely lives up to the buildup. The description is fantastic. Yang Jizhu's twin halberds are like two dragons playing in the water, fluid, fast, relentless.
And Shan Shituo.
His pole arm is like a fierce tiger leaving the mountain. Raw power, aggression. It's a perfect contrast in styles.
How long did they fight?
Over 100 rounds. And the text makes a point of saying no superiority or inferiority. They are perfectly matched.
Chess meets worthy opponent. General meets fine talent. That line says it all.
It really does. It confirms Yang Jizhu is everything the song needed. That force multiplier.
And this goes back to your earlier point.
Earlier.
While this amazing duel is happening, what's Niu Gao doing?
Ah, yes. This is the real genius of the plan. While Shan Shijuo is completely absorbed in this epic clash, his ego, his rage, all focused on Yang Jizhu.
Niu Gao isn't just watching the show.
Not at all. He's busy directing his troops. They're pushing that crucial grain convoy past the blockade while Shan Shijuo is distracted.
So the duel was the distraction.
It was a perfect distraction. The delivery of the supplies was the real objective all along.
That's brilliant. Using the enemy commander's focus on personal glory against him?
Exactly. Eventually, Shan Shituo realizes he's been played. He tries to break off, go after the grain wagons rolling past him.
It's too late.
Too late. He's immediately intercepted again. Yang Jizhu blocks him, and Wang Ying, the little god of fire who retreated earlier, is back too, recovered and ready.
So now Shan Shituo is facing two of them.
Two fresh, skilled generals. One who's his equal, the other fighting probably with renewed determination. He's outnumbered, outmaneuvered. He has no choice but to retreat.
Back to his camp, completely frustrated, I imagine.
Utterly furious. Meanwhile, Yang Jizhu, Wang Ying, and Niu Gao ride back to Yulei's camp. Victorious. And what does Yulei praise?
The successful delivery of the grain.
Exactly. That's the real victory they celebrate.
But as you said, the Jin forces aren't crushed. They've just pulled back. Shan Shituo is angry. What happens next? Does he just try again tomorrow?
Well, this is where the story takes a sharp turn, a pivot. Shan Shituo is furious, yes, looking for a way to counter Yang Jizhu. Before he can even really regroup, someone else shows up in the Jin camp. A figure who's been defeated before, but is now back.
Who is it?
The state preceptor, Pu Feng.
The advisor. The strategist.
More than that, perhaps. The implication is really clear. brute force, superior martial arts
yeah.
that failed the Jin this time. Shaun and Shituo couldn't overwhelm them.
So Pu Feng brings something different.
Exactly. Up to now, the Song of One, using, you know, traditional fighting skills, bravery, clever tactics like New Gao's bluff, conventional warfare, more or less.
But Pu Feng suggests something else.
Yes. The arrival of the state preceptor signals a shift. The challenge is about to change from, let's say, military might to something more unsettling. Occult methods, magic.